Welcome to CoreCast, a production of National Community Renaissance, a nonprofit affordable housing developer dedicated to solving the housing challenges facing seniors, veterans, and low-income families in America. CoreCast is a monthly podcast designed to expand interest in the area of affordable housing, as well as explore solutions and interview problem solvers in the industry. Welcome to episode 3 of CoreCast, a production of National Community Renaissance. And this week again, it's Jonathan Kendrick joined by Steve Pontell, the president and CEO of National Community Renaissance. Steve, how are you doing today?
Doing okay. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you. And it is the week that school begins for several folks. Our taping day is Monday, August 3rd today, which is when San Bernardino City Unified School Districts begin the school year again. And we have as our illustrious guest today, Mike Gallo, who is the chairman of the school board in San Bernardino City, as well as several other organizations, Kelly Space Technology and Technical Employment Training. And he really has his finger on the pulse of education programs in this region and across the country. And so we're very happy to have him as a guest later in the show today, as well as our usual legislative updates from Michael Novogradic, which we look forward to very much each episode. But first, we're going to start with our usual topic of the water cooler and discuss this intersection of affordable housing and education. And, you know, one of our primary missions here, Steve, is to discover or enlighten, research how affordable housing impacts with other areas of the community, of the policy debate. And so today it is education. And Steve, looking at several different aspects, and we're going to start with the first being that affordable housing can help reduce the amount of disruptive moves. So when a child does move, there are many studies that have gone through and looked at how does that affect their educational performance and the idea of hypermobility, students that are moving from home to home every several months, once a year, and how that impacts their educational performance. Steve, how have you seen that in our communities and as well as in your other work on different boards and associations throughout your career, how affordable housing or housing in general, stable housing, leads to better educational outcomes for students?
Sure. Thank you, Jonathan. So let's take a step back and understand and remember that, you know, two of the basic human needs are food and shelter. And so at the end of the day, the shelter part of that equation is something that we as a society and all of our communities have not taken care of to the degree that is necessary. And so that leads to all sorts of unintended consequences. Because if people do not have adequate shelter, then they're going to improvise in ways that are not good for them and not good for the communities within which they're living. And one of the most dramatic, and in my opinion, you know, the height of irresponsibility of us as a society is the impact of inadequate shelter on our children in a variety of ways. And shelter means a number of things. So shelter is not just the roof over the head, but shelter is the environment within which you live. It's the safety of that environment, the quality of that environment. And so the better the shelter, the higher the performance of the people that are living within that shelter. And so just if there was a way that we could just get that, you know, internalized so that our communities were paying as much attention to generating adequate shelter as they were to pursuing the next Costco or Walmart or, you know, whatever they view as a priority, the entire community would work better. But the effect of that on children is most dramatic. And this is not complicated. This is very obvious that if a child is living in an environment that is stable, where they have space within which to be able to study, where they have a sense of security, and you can eliminate uncertainty and fear from their environment, then those children are going to perform better than children that are in increasingly unstable living circumstances. And when we talk about homeless, it's important to also remember that it's not just a question of somebody living in a car on the streets, but it's also the consequence of multiple families living together, you know, kids sleeping on couches. And we just have environments that are not conducive to high quality performance by our children in education. And This is an opportunity we have to address a critical need that will have multi-generational impacts as we go forward. And so to be able to think about the creation of housing that can be provided at a price point that families can afford, creating an environment for children that are stable, where they have access to the necessary amenities to be able to study, should be an obvious goal for every one of our communities.
So there's several different symptoms, I guess, as you pointed out, several different causes of these lower performance standards or performance measures that these students achieve. And so you mentioned homelessness. Now there's a study out from the National Center on Family Homelessness that says 1.6 million American children experience homelessness each year. The Department of Education did a study on that in 2010. They said it's about a million students that experience that. But as you said, the definitions may be different, and it's not just homelessness. You know, we think of that, but there are also other aspects as well. There's overcrowding. Studies have found that children growing up in overcrowded housing have lower math and reading scores, they complete fewer years of education, and they more commonly fall behind in school. They're less likely to graduate. As we talked about in the opening, families that move more often, the education performance goes down as well. And then finally, this idea of the housing conditions themselves. They say the persistent presence of cockroaches, pesticides, molds, all of these can contribute to the incidence of asthma, which leads to absenteeism from school, and again, lower scores. So it's not just homelessness, as you mentioned, but it's a wide variety of areas affected by housing that can lead to poor performance.
All right. And it's fascinating because we don't spend anywhere near enough time thinking about the quality of the environment. My understanding is the Kresge Foundation did a study, and there was an estimated 5 million housing units nationally where the environmental quality inside was worse than the environmental quality outside, and people were living in conditions that nobody should be living in. And so not only do we have a shortage of housing, and in the state of California, it's estimated to be about 1.5 million. Nationwide, it's about 8 to 10 million. But we have the quality of housing challenge, and so that compounds the need for the production of adequate housing. And at the very time we need more housing that people can afford, the costs of producing housing are doing nothing but going up. And so the deficiency is growing, and the consequences of that we're going to experience for a long time to come.
Now, turning towards some solutions, there's, as we've talked about in previous episodes of the podcast, there's an idea of helping families to move out of these lower income areas that are associated with poorer performing schools. And the idea being to allow them to move some mobility, whether it's through housing choice vouchers, to move into different areas to schools that are performing better. The research, though, is interesting in this area in that it says that that can be helpful, but only if it's accompanied by counseling for the families, some supportive services, after school programs in the communities. And so, Steve, how have you seen that played out, as well as what is National Core doing on the ground to help families as they move into our affordable housing or other opportunities for themselves?
Right. It's interesting. I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity, but I would encourage you to see the documentary Waiting for Superman. And in there, there's a very compelling point about the assumption has been bad neighborhoods create bad schools. And so there are schools around the country that year after year, graduating class after graduating class, the kids perform very poorly and the neighborhoods struggle. And the documentary made an observation that actually bad schools make bad neighborhoods. And so you can try and move everybody out and away from a bad school, or you can try to transform the school so that the school can have a positive impact on all the residents of that neighborhood. And the challenge is we don't have the resources to move everybody out of those neighborhoods. And so for those families and children left behind, they have a diminishing resource base with which to be able to address the needs. So National Core's perspective on the communities that we're in is how do we create a positive impact on the neighborhoods we're in and a positive impact in the schools that with whom we partner in order to have a transformative impact on the entire neighborhood and all of the children and family living within those neighborhoods. You know, I could even argue that it's irresponsible to focus significant energy and resources on helping people move out as opposed to using those very limited resources to try and transform that neighborhood into a positive environment.
We often talk about affordable housing as a catalyst for community transformation, not just adding housing to a community, but creating a place where additional investment can come into the community, but as well as a place that can be the center of the community. And it's very interesting that research has found that the high-quality after-school programs at a affordable housing development or a public housing project can have a positive impact on children's performance much more though than those that are outside of those, because for several reasons. One, transportation issues are not a problem. You know, the children already live there. Parents feel much more comfortable to have their children close to where they are. It can help in high crime areas where parents are hesitant to let their students go far away. But to have this in the affordable housing development right where they live, Steve, how have you seen that act as a catalyst for transformation as well?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have a lot of good experience with delivering after-school programs that are integrated with the goals of the school districts where we have our communities. And the opportunities for those children to be able to participate in the kinds of programs that other children living in other neighborhoods take for granted has had very positive results. We just completed a summer program in the Waterman Gardens neighborhood in San Bernardino, where the children participating in that project, in that summer program, had noticeable improvement in their academic performance. And so the ability to provide after-school summer programs in the neighborhoods, as you pointed out, eliminates the barriers to participation that many families without transportation and without resources have. And so it'd be our hope that having a development, whether it's an affordable housing development or if it's a market rate housing development, but to be able to have place-based strategies for after-school programs will significantly help the children, help the schools, help the neighborhoods. And it's a commitment that we have going forward.
And so we are now very pleased to welcome in Mike Gallo to the show, who is the chairman of the San Bernardino City Unified School District School Board, as well as has plenty of other experience in the education area. And Steve is going to be interviewing him to find out more about this area of research and of practicum as well.
So I'm very pleased to have Mike Gallo with us today. So Mike, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thank you, Steve. My pleasure.
Yeah, especially on the first day of school for San Bernardino City Schools. So congratulations on that as well.
Thank you. Ready for a big year.
Absolutely. So Mike is a very unique person in a variety of ways. And it's been interesting for me because over the years I know a lot of business owners and business leaders, and they will often complain and comment and opine about the challenges with education and everything that goes along with that. And they struggle to figure out, okay, so how do we fix it? How do we deal with it? Mike is one of those unique personalities that not only had opinions about the challenges with education, but decided to actually do something about it. So as the president and CEO of Kelly Space and Technology, which is a very interesting business, Mike also decided to run for the school board. And so, Mike, as a business owner, that was a pretty ambitious, daring, gutsy commitment that you were willing to make. Maybe just share a little bit about why did you do it? I mean, what was it that led you to want to serve in that way?
Well, Steve, you've noted I also serve on the State Workforce Investment Board as a governor's appointee on the Career Pathways and Education Committee. And I've also been on the County Workforce Board for ever since its inception. And predominantly, it's really to figure out how we link employers with the talent that's out there. And quite frankly, my business with Kelly Space and Technology really relies on high tech, you know, really highly skilled, qualified, credentialed, and certified people to perform the tasks that I need. So my interest in workforce kind of started off with just my interest in building my company and economic development. Well, you don't have to look too far at workforce investment before you start looking at education and saying, well, gee, if we're going to grow up a competent, skilled, qualified workforce, we got to really start preparing our students much, much earlier than, say, high school or post-high school and college in order for them to think about career pathways. And in fact, when you start looking at the data out there, inspiring and engaging students early in their onset of their public education experience is critical to really promote and to ensure student achievement.
So, Mike, but having that awareness and that experience, but then taking the leap to actually run for elected office is what most business people are not willing to do.
Right.
And so how has that been? How has that, what have been your biggest surprises in that experience?
I was on a mission, Steve, and the mission was to give a different level of leadership there. And quite frankly, it all begins and ends with leadership. When I started looking at the district, and you look at the plummeting test scores, you looked at plummeting performances in every single demographic that you could think of, and over a decade or more, the school district just in decline. And there's no real reason for that. There really isn't. Kids can achieve, and kids can achieve when they're inspired and when they're especially engaged in relevant, hands-on, applied learning experiences. And we saw that getting yanked out of our public education system. So, quite frankly, I came in with a mission, and that mission was to reintroduce career pathways and applied learning and that applied curriculum to get kids fired up early on into their public education experience, as we were talking. And that's what we're seeing the results from some of my nonprofit work in a technical employment training inc with even adults, knowing that they can actually learn and taking them through advanced manufacturing, precision machining, putting them through national credentials and certification programs that are just horrific in difficulty. And they can even achieve there. So, and these are people who had given up, and I'm telling you, when you start looking at kids and you start seeing the fire in their eyes early on, we extinguish that flame, is what we've done in public education, unfortunately. And, you know, we need to really ignite it and just fire that in the belly kind of fire and get it moving, you know.
So it would appear as though San Bernardino City Schools has turned the corner. I mean, everything I hear and see, there's some very positive results occurring. Mm-hmm. What are the three things that you would credit with having that positive impact?
You know, I would say two things are, one, developing a shared vision for the district. And that's part of a leadership development process. You know, we had a fractionated leadership. We had really no priorities and no direction. We were confusing activity with accomplishment, and because we'd never really defined what accomplishment was. So you had no way of prioritizing tasks and activities. And so everybody was just busy doing stuff and doing things without really recognizing what was actually contributing towards the mission. And the mission, again, if you defined it, is to see students prepared for both college and careers, you know, so they can successfully have choices. They can choose to go to college, they can choose to enter careers, or choose to do both. And that's the real key. And so it was really the alignment of all of our community members, our unions, our teachers, our leaders, you know, the entire community, we rallied around and developed this shared vision. So they felt a part of it. And so once you got that shared vision now, something to aspire to and shoot for, and everybody agrees, you know, you think that everybody's aside, and you look at the paper and you see people on every perspective on pick an issue, and you find that when you solicit this input from people, what do you always want to see, hear, and feel in a district or a community? What do you never want to see, hear, and feel? What are your priorities? And you find that regardless of the socioeconomic status, the education attainment level of people, they all want the same things. They want a good quality of life. They want safe schools. They want safe communities. They want good quality jobs. They want opportunity for their kids. You know, blah, blah, blah. It's the same stuff that we want. So we all want that same vision and have that same aspiration for our kids and for us, quite frankly. And so this effort of bringing leadership together to coalesce that into what we call a shared vision was step one. Step two was now coalescing leadership around to set priorities, to look at key performance indicators, and to start focusing their activities and budgets and efforts and your entire programmatics and curriculum and schedules on meeting those specific priority areas of interest.
So then maybe let's talk a little bit about the connection between schools and community, schools and neighborhood. You know, one of the interesting observations that I had and I shared a little bit ago was in the documentary Waiting for Superman. You know, there's been an assumption historically that bad neighborhoods create bad schools. One of the observations in the documentary is that it appears bad schools create bad neighborhoods. And one of the challenges in San Bernardino is it has its share of challenged neighborhoods. One of the things that we have tried to do and are experimenting is how do we transform the Waterman Gardens neighborhood specifically? But what have your observations been about the nature of the challenges in a neighborhood and the role schools can play in being a part of that transformation?
You know, Steve, to me, it is fundamental that a school district be involved in building and redeveloping neighborhoods as National Core's priority mission is. And quite frankly, we need to be linked at the hip in partnership in doing this because it's a community issue. That's what schools are, really. It's just we're building the next generation of leaders. We're building the next generation of neighbors and community members. And we are doing that. Whether we do it well or poorly, we're still doing it. And the point is, start focusing on what's going to yield the economic prosperity for our students and for the adults as well. And maybe you know what our school district is one of the few in this area that maintains a very robust and strong 6,000-plus member strong adult school as well. So we're a K-12 school district, but we also look at engaging parents and figuring out how we put parents on a pathway to prosperity as well. And inextricably linked with the public housing and private housing, quite frankly, and low affordable, you know, affordable housing in various increments and things. It's a way of building an entire community, and schools are as much a part of that as housing and policing and quality of life issues.
Right. One of the challenges that I've observed is that the silos are very tall and the walls are very thick. And one of the challenges we have is that, you know, by definition, water people talk to water people and transportation people talk to transportation people and education people talk to education, housing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And yet the issues are all completely linked. And there have been a number of national studies on a couple of critical issues linking the stability of housing with education performance. And so one aspect of the issue is the number of times a child moves, especially within a school year, has significant negative effects. Right. And to the extent we can help stabilize their, you know, the longevity of their place of residence is an important piece. And then secondarily, the quality of their housing environment, mm-hmm. you know, if they're in an overcrowded condition where they have no place to study or an unsafe condition or an unsanitary condition, you know, has impact on that. What would be the best way to engage the school district in a conversation to address those two issues, the stability and longevity of housing and the quality of housing?
And just maybe give a couple demographic examples here. We're 50 in the city of San Bernardino. 54.3% of our population is on some sort of public assistance. So needless to say, they're following into this kind of category that we're discussing here. And there's a strategy out there called collective impact. It's one put out by Stanford Innovation Review. It's kind of come out in about 2011 and further matured in 2012 and 2013. And it's really become a collaborative model on how we align these stovepipe systems to cooperate and to at least feed each other, share systems, share resources, et cetera. All of the things that we know is kind of the altruistic ultimate end goal here. But with the transiency rate that this kind of demographic brings, you know, that many people in poverty, you just see people moving through schools, and they, you know, the numbers are compelling when you start looking at if a student moves more than twice, they are 92% likely not to graduate from high school. I mean, you just think about that. And so what does that mean? Create stability in our schools. So we're doing it in two ways. I mean, we can't really assist in stop people from moving per se, but we can create schools of choice. We can have parents, if they find a school that they like, and we're doing this through career pathways and offering these kinds of opportunities for our students, where students can select the school that they wish to attend, and then no matter where they live, they can select that school and go there. So that's one way that we're trying to do this. And another way to do it is to just kind of create this partnerships with organizations like National Core, with community redevelopment activities. I know that the state has kind of dismantled that entire operation, but that doesn't mean that the effort doesn't need to persist. And in an economic development strategy, and quite frankly, I think moving people from dependency, so to speak, to prosperity is probably the single most important economic development strategy we can build, especially from a city like in a city like San Bernardino.
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation. And what I have really appreciated about San Bernardino City Schools is the willingness to be at the table and participate in conversations and efforts that would not be viewed as traditional education
conversations. One of the things that we just did, and this is really kind of something, there's about 10,000 families in the city of San Bernardino that have no computer access at home. So what we've done is we've purchased 5,000 computers, Chromebooks this year, with 4G access to it, handed them out through, you know, a training program, et cetera, to those families. We've gotten, like, I want to say 2,200, 2,300 out already. We just purchased them this summer. We're going to be rolling out for every single family that doesn't have computer technology at home, because, again, the numbers are compelling. If a student doesn't have access to that at home, they are less likely to achieve. And so these are the kinds of things that, like you said, are non-traditional kinds of investments, and the things that we even did with National Core this summer and sponsoring a summer program. It happened to be a focus on reading and mathematics, and the students had year gains in 6 weeks. I mean, so these are the kinds of things we absolutely need to be partnering on, Steve.
Right, and our commitment is both with regard to after-school programs and summer programs to make sure that they're in alignment with the goals of the schools where we have communities, and then be able to provide that additional synergy and support for those kids. So, Mike, in the last couple of minutes, what's your hope? What's your next big goal?
I got to tell you, the thing that really turns my crank is to see in every kid, and I mean all 55,000 students, we're the eighth largest district in California, involved in a career pathway of their choice. Now, what does that mean for kindergarten? Not like we're gearing them towards a career, but you're giving them exposure opportunities to things that are exciting and really gets them engaged and gets them excited about education. One of the things that we did is in advanced manufacturing, we have third grade students at Norton Elementary School that are on SolidWorks, 3D SolidWorks model, the same thing my rocket scientists are using. And the students are designing up things. Mr. Callow, I'm drilling a hole here. I'm cutting a radius of a half an inch here, and I'm extruding the part. Extruding the part? I didn't know what extruding meant till I went to college. And we have third grade kids that are actually understanding this and getting fired up and stoked up, taking the thumb drive off of their computer, plugging it into the 3D printer, and printing out their little student keychains that they're selling as part of a student-run business, so that it's engaging all of our students in career pathways. And you see these kids not only interested in the academics, and you're relating all of the core curriculum and everything to the actual applied learning experiences, and seeing them excited, and they're coming to school asking more questions than you would have thought a high school student would do. That's the kind of engagement that we're looking to really stimulate in our kids.
Very cool. And so I just want to thank you, Mike, president of the San Mateo City Schools, taking the time on the first day of school to be with us today. Good luck this year.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Hello, I'm Michael Novogradic, managing partner at Novogradic & Company, LLP. We're a national CPA firm specializing in tax, audit, and consulting services for tax credit-assisted developments, especially multifamily affordable housing. I'm here today to share with you some affordable housing news highlights that were featured over the past month in my weekly Tax Credit Tuesday podcast. If you're ready, let's get started. Let's begin with news from the United States Supreme Court, which last month finally issued its ruling in the Texas case concerning housing discrimination. The verdict? Discrimination doesn't need to be intentional to be against federal law. The 5-4 decision was authored by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who some thought would decide the other way. The decision allows complaints to be made under the Fair Housing Act based on disparate impact. Disparate impact is when a policy that appears to be neutral has a discriminatory effect on a protected class. The court decision actually only settles one specific issue. It says that disparate impact can be used in a fair housing complaint. Had the court ruled otherwise, petitioners would have to prove intent as well as damage. The case was based on a claim that Texas approved too many low-income housing tax credit properties in poor, mostly black neighborhoods in Dallas, while largely keeping them out of wealthy white neighborhoods. The case was filed in 2008 and won at each level before it was upheld by a federal appeals court in 2012. Justice Kennedy wrote that the court wasn't ruling out legitimate government policies when enacted by municipal housing authorities or private developers. He wrote that, quote, a disparate impact claim that relies on statistical disparity must fail if the plaintiff cannot point to a defendant's policy or policies causing that disparity, end quote. He also said that governmental or public policies aren't contrary to the disparate impact requirement unless they are, and I quote again, artificial, arbitrary, and unnecessary barriers, close quote. And he specifically said that the verdict does not impugn housing authorities, and I quote again, race-neutral efforts to encourage revitalization of communities that have long suffered the harsh consequences of segregated housing patterns, close quote. This was the third time that housing advocates appealed a disparate impact housing case to the High Court. Both times previously, though, the cases were withdrawn or settled before actually reaching the Supreme Court. This verdict was somewhat surprising. Many expected the court's conservative majority to overturn the lower court decision. But Justice Kennedy joined the court's four liberals on the issue. For those in the low-income housing tax credit world, the most direct effect will most likely be changes in some qualified allocation plans so they don't inadvertently place more low-income housing tax credit properties in lower-income areas. Many states already have taken those steps, often by prioritizing developments that go into high opportunity areas. You can read the case at www.taxcredithousing.com, hover over LIHTC and click on court rulings. It's entitled Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs versus the Inclusive Communities Project. If you have any questions about some of the implications of this rule on housing developments in the United States, please contact Mark Shelburne in our North Carolina office. In other news, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development last month issued revised guidance on the Rental Assistance Demonstration, or RAD, program. There are a few changes I want to highlight for you. First of all, the guidance incorporates the cap increase on public housing conversions. That's the increase from 60,000 to 185,000 units that was approved by Congress in December. Second, It makes certain moderate rehabilitation single room occupancy, mod rehab SRO, properties eligible for RAD. This would give owners and investors greater opportunity to access debt and equity for capital improvements. Third, it strengthens key rights and protections for residents. Fourth, HUD will allow multifamily property owners in its rent supplement, or rent sup, and rental assistance payment, or RAP, programs to convert to project-based rental assistance. Previously, they could only convert to project-based vouchers. This new allowance could be an attractive option for owners because of its familiarity to lenders and investors. And finally, the guidance strengthens the requirement that public housing authorities maintain control of any new entity formed as part of a RAD conversion. The same affordability, ownership, and control requirements must be maintained in the event of foreclosure, bankruptcy, or default under contract. This is meant to help keep housing affordable for existing tenants. To learn more about how the revised guidance could affect your property or properties, contact my partner Susan Wilson and our Austin, Texas office at 512-340-0420. Next, I'd like to discuss a bill that could greatly increase affordable housing options for certain full-time students. As many of you know, full-time students who would otherwise qualify for low-income housing cannot generally access housing units funded under the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. The purpose of the student rule is to prohibit low-income housing tax credits from being used to build dormitories or student housing. It also helps prevent college students from using resources meant for individuals and families with more serious housing needs. That being said, the student rule provides no exception for homeless and recently homeless youth or veterans who may face more severe housing challenges than other students. This new bill could change that. If passed, the legislation would give homeless or previously homeless full-time students the chance to qualify for low-income housing tax credit housing. Essentially, their status as a student would no longer automatically disqualify them for such housing. Which students would qualify for this exemption? Individuals who are homeless children or youth within 7 years of moving into the low-income housing tax credit unit, as well as veterans who are or have been homeless within 5 years of moving into the low-income housing tax credit unit. This bipartisan bill was introduced by Senators Al Franken, Democrat from Minnesota, and Rob Portman, Republican from Ohio. Other co-sponsors include Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington, Senator Susan Collins, Republican from Maine, and Senator Angus King, Independent from Maine. Senators Franken and Portman introduced similar legislation last year. Supporters of the bill say that young people and veterans should not be forced to choose between housing and pursuing their education. The bill is called the Housing for Homeless Students Act of 2015, and it's Senate Bill 1412. And you can find a copy of it at www.taxcredithousing.com. Well, that brings me to the end of this week's report. For more tax credit news, tune into our weekly Tax Credit Tuesday podcast. It's available on iTunes and on the Novogratz website at www.novoco.com/podcast. This is Michael Novogratz. Thanks for listening.
That will conclude what was a very interesting episode of CoreCast, our third episode now, one where we looked at the intersection of affordable housing and education. We had the privilege of being joined by Mike Gallo, the president of the San Bernardino City Unified School District School Board, as well as hearing our normal legislative roundups from Michael Novogratz, for which we are very thankful. The end of the show is a usual time where we look at the highlights that we pulled out, something that we learned from the show this week. And for me, it was from Mike Gallo's interview with Steve, and where he discussed when we tend to confuse action with accomplishment, and just the passion that Mike Gallo has for transforming education and the idea of presenting students with options, options for either college or a career. He said the word choices several times. And then the idea as well of this collective impact, how we as a community need to take on these issues together and that we can better solve them as a community, not as issues taken separately in silos where we try to tackle the housing problem and the education problem in different ways, but how can we work together as some are doing, as we discussed in the examples here in San Bernardino and as going on in many other communities across the country as well. So we hope you enjoyed the episode today as much as I certainly did. We encourage you to continue to subscribe to this podcast. If you've yet to do so, you can find us on iTunes. Again, just search CoreCast. You can also find us on our website at www.nationalcore.org, where you can find more information. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions or comments, please email us. You can contact me at jkendrick@nationalcore.org, and we'd love to get back to you and incorporate your feedback into the show as well. Well, that will do it for Episode 3 of CoreCast. We look forward to talking with you next month for Episode 4, in which we'll examine the links between housing and health.